Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins. I work for Fairway Markets in the New York area, and we're awfully proud to support Heritage Radio, and we care so much about everything that goes on out here at Roberta's in their studio, because they talk to people who are serious about food, and that's what we are at Fairway, is we're serious about food. We just care very deeply about you as a customer, and how you cook and what you cook with and how you entertain, and that's why we love to support Heritage Radio, because it's pretty much the same thing. It's wanting to find happiness through serious food and people who are serious about it and care about learning everything there is to learn about it. And that's we're kindred spirits. If it's something worth having in your kitchen, you're going to find it at Fairway. And if there's somebody worth talking to about food, you're going to find them on Heritage Radio, and we will be supporting you guys for a long, long time. At Fairway, I'm your personal grocer, Steve Jenkins, Fairway Market.
Hello and welcome to A Taste of the Past, or I should say, Kong Hei Fat Choi, and that is Happy New Year, Happy New Year in Chinese. This being the first day of the Chinese New Year, if you're listening live, this is February 3rd, and it's the first day of the Chinese New Year, which is also the Lunar New Year, and also called the Spring Festival, which, even though it's the middle of winter, we sure could use a little spring here in the Northeast. We just skirted another big storm. But we are so happy to be celebrating Chinese New Year with all the Chinese residents, and actually a lot of Asians all over the world. And I have with me today Kian Lam Ko, or Ko Kian Lam. We'll call him Kian for today, right? Welcome, Kian.
Thank you.
Ko is his family name, as we were trying to make that straight. So, Kian. And Kian writes a wonderful blog called redcook.net, and he teaches Chinese cooking lessons as well. And I've invited Kian on today to talk about the tradition of foods in the Chinese New Year. Of course, you know, you see the dragon dances and all the red lanterns and the fancy dresses and celebrations throughout Chinese New Year, which is about 2 weeks, right? Is it 2 weeks of celebration?
It's a two-week celebration.
But what is really a major part of the tradition are foods. Foods that are...
Absolutely.
Right, and they have special meaning, and I'm ready to learn about that, because there was so many of them that I had not, you know, we all have heard, many of us, well, at least most of us have heard about long noodles for longevity. You eat the noodles and don't cut them on New Year's, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know about a few others, Kian. So let's start by talking about a big feast you had last night for New Year's Eve.
Yes. I actually had a 10-course meal last night for family and a few neighbors that came and joined us as well. It was really a fun thing. I do this every year on New Year's Eve, which is the night that we actually generally celebrate. And it's all commonly known as a reunion dinner. This is when family from all over the places would return to their home and celebrate with each other.
Biggest travel day,
that's
right?
That's right. This is why in China during the Chinese New Year, it's impossible to get any transportation at all, train the airlines or whatever. It's very, very difficult, very crowded. But yes, and that's what I did last night. We had a 10-course meal. It included some very interesting dishes, such as Wisconsin ginseng with silky chicken soup. And
so you brought a little American product in there.
That's right, because we can actually now buy fresh ginseng in Chinatown from Wisconsin, which actually, speaking of Wisconsin ginseng, is actually very prized in Asia. Huh. And so it was a really nice treat. Especially for the winter time, nice soup with the ginseng. Another dish that I always make for Chinese New Year, which my family always expected, is the red cooked pork, which actually really is a pork belly that's been stewed in soy sauce and star anise, and it's served with the steamed buns, and all my family always enjoyed that, so they expect it every year. And there are other, dishes that is very traditional, which is fish. Fish is always part of a Chinese New Year meal because fish in Chinese pronounced yu, and that also means abundance or plentiful. So, you would always want to have fish at the end of the year to have plentiful leftover to bring over to the new year, and that's why we always have fish.
Well, it sounds like an incredible dinner. And what it's interesting because I'm fortunate enough to have seen pictures of that red cooked pork on your blog, redcook.net, from whence the name came, right?
That's
correct. The red cooking, and also the recipe. But you weren't always a cook. I mean, you were trained as an engineer, a software engineer, and worked as a
software developer.
Software developer, yeah. Right. But your heart was always in the kitchen, you said.
My heart has always been in the kitchen. I remembered when I was growing up in Singapore, I've always enjoyed watching my aunt. We live in this huge extended family. So we have, my aunt and uncle all live under the same roof. And so the kitchen will always prepare huge meals every night. And
so you did have servants cooking. You had someone cooking for you.
We did have help in the kitchen. And one of the things that I used to really enjoy doing is to go to the kitchen and actually help the servants prepare. And, my uncles would usually shoo me away because, boys are not supposed to be in the kitchen. But I've always enjoyed that. But I didn't really start cooking until I came to college here in America and moved away and living by myself. And I started experimenting with different things. And that's how I learned to cook.
You had to eat, and you wanted to eat the food of your country. So you had to cook it, right?
That's correct, yeah. And, at the college, I have a lot of classmates that are from Taiwan. And very often they have relatives and parents that came to visit, and I would learn a lot of the Chinese cooking from the mothers and aunts and sisters of my classmates. Mm-hmm. And really that's how I sort of got interested into really cooking Chinese food.
Well, and the foods of Singapore do differ quite a bit from, let's say, from the Cantonese cooking.
That is correct. Although I would say that Singapore Malaysian food, Chinese food, really is based on Cantonese and Fujian cooking because those are the two predominant immigrants that moved to Southeast Asia from China. Mm. And in fact, my family is from Fujian also. And so, at home, most of our Chinese food that's cooked at home was Fujian cooking. But having said that, we are exposed to a lot of other cuisine in Singapore, Cantonese and Sichuan cooking and some modern style cooking. But predominantly, it would be Cantonese and Fujianese.
Well, and for the new year, here we get into the language differences as well. But I'm taking that a lot of it is Cantonese derived. And the foods that are traditional and are associated with good luck and longevity derive from an interesting point in the language. You want to
That's
talk about
correct.
That?
Yes. The Chinese love homophones, which is really two characters that pronounce the same but may not mean the same thing. Fish, for example, is an excellent example of that I mentioned earlier. Another thing that is also very very common is Chinese New Year cake. You know, the character for year is pronounced nian, and the character for sticky is also pronounced nian.
And new sticky.
Right, new year sticky. So they're both pronounced the same way. So, you know, we have a lot of dishes that are sticky cake. And so, you know, instead of calling it sticky cake, we actually call it year cake, so meaning it's a New Year cake. And so that's why there are a lot of New Year cakes that serve during the New celebrations. Although actually sticky cake is consumed year round, but specifically during New Year, consume it a lot to as a symbol of bringing in the new year.
Well, we're going to talk more about the sticky cake later in the show because I actually have a recipe I'd like to give them. But talk about some of the other homonyms or some of the other foods that are associated with the new year for whatever reasons, good luck, longevity, prosperity. A lot of foods connected with prosperity.
Absolutely. The Chinese loved the concept of prosperity.
Money.
One of the things that's is also very common is the tangerine. Tangerine is pronounced ji, and it's also it also means prosperity actually in Chinese. So this tradition actually is very predominantly in the south. I think the northern part of China don't really see the tangerine as being as much of a symbol as like the Cantonese, and especially the Cantonese. And you know, we always exchange tangerines when we see each other during the New Year's, meaning to give each other prosperity, mm-hmm. give each other good fortune, and that's what the symbolism of tangerine is. And you know, longevity noodles is also something that is consumed a lot during Chinese New Year. Although longevity noodles is also served during birthday, but during New Year's,
oh, that would make sense.
Yes,
sure.
But during New Year, it really is sort of like a wish for good health for each other and celebrating, the good health of the family.
I'll remember that. Never serve an Asian short noodles on his birthday, right? Bad form.
Well, you know, actually, nowadays, most people just serve regular noodle as well.
Yeah. what about dumplings? We know dumplings are served all the time, but at New Year's, there.
Yes, the tradition of dumplings actually is more a northern tradition.
It is.
Dumpling is actually a very common diet in the northern part of China, and the shape of the dumpling is very much like a gold ingot, and that's the reason why they serve dumplings because it's sort of like symbolizes again prosperity to have a lot of gold ingot around in your dinner table. And the south, there's a tradition along the coast of Fujian and also Taiwan that they make this egg dumpling, which is really a dumpling that's with an egg batter wrapper, and it's gold in color, and it's also shaped like an ingot, so it makes it even a better symbol for prosperity. And in that area, most the dumplings are actually made into soup and served along with the dinner. Now, in northern China, when they serve dumplings during New Year, basically it's a communal meal. The whole family participated in folding them, making them, and then it's
so even in the preparation.
Absolutely, oh, nice. Absolutely. So it's part of the whole ritual of communal activity.
And I would imagine for New Year's there are probably a lot of fish dumplings, right? Like crab stuffed dumplings.
That's right. That's right.
Bring in that double luck.
Right. That's, well, you know, very often a whole fish is always served because it's the whole fish really is a symbol of a wholeness of the family. So generally, when they serve fish for Chinese New Year, it is a whole fish.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Any order in which it's consumed, does it stay on the table for a while as a symbol, or is it consumed as soon as it's served?
Some family actually serve the fish at the end, because the reason is, we have a term called 年年有余, which means it's plentiful every year, and so you have abundance every year.
Abundance, right.
So
right.
So that means it really should be at the end, because even at the end you still have plentiful of fish to eat. And so many family actually generally put the fish course at the end.
Well, you are going, and we were talking about dumplings, but you're actually going to be presenting and discussing a film tomorrow in New York City at MoCA. That's the Museum of Chinese in America. It's
That's
a film
correct.
About what are the film's about dumplings.
Well, it's actually a film that is around a family meal, and in fact, this is what
you
I
just
was
described.
Just describe. Yeah. It's a family meal where the family actually made dumplings, and before the dinner, and it's the interaction between all the family members during the preparation and during the meal. And so,
oh, that's wonderful. So after the film, then you're going to be talking about the significance.
That's correct. After the film, I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of the dumplings in China, and then we will discuss a little bit more about how the family shares the dumplings.
Oh, terrific! I think there are some places still left for that viewing, and that's MOCA, Museum of Chinese in America, probably .org, so people can go and look at that if they happen to be in New York City and want to partake in that celebration. That sounds wonderful. Well, when we come back, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about more of these dishes and get back to that sticky cake. Hi, I'm back with Qian Lam, and we're talking about Chinese New Year and the special foods of Chinese New Year. I have a correction, actually, on the Museum of Chinese in America. It's the website is mocany.org. So anyone in New York City who might be interested in seeing the film on dumplings and listen to Qian discuss dumplings afterwards, you can go to mocany.org. Well, a good friend, your good friend too, actually, Grace Young. She, in her newest book, Stir Frying,
To the Sky's Edge.
I always want to say to the edge of the sky. It's Stir Frying to the Sky's Edge. She just wrote a small piece on celebrating on the Chinese New Year, but it was wonderful because she went all around the world and finding out that the Chinese food that exists in all the different, so many different cultures, and in fact, Chinese New Year celebrations. But she gave a cute little homonym symbolism list for different foods. And you can chime in and mention on anything, but I thought it would be fun to just kind of go down the list quickly. Shrimp is happiness and laughter. Some of these, you said, are regional, so they're not necessarily familiar to you. And as you
right.
were saying, so many of the celebrations, so many of the traditions are regional traditions
right.
like we have in any country. Eggs, fertility, of course. Mushrooms, growing fortunes. There we have that prosperity again. Well, they grow quickly. Yes, quick fortunes, right?
Quick fortune.
Lettuce, prosperity and wealth. Chicken, a proper beginning and end. Scallions, intelligence. clams and scallops, prosperity again. Noodles, of course, longevity. Lobster. Now that's a symbol of the dragon. And what is the symbolism of the dragon? You see it in the Chinese celebrations, the parades and the dances. What is the dragon?
Dragon has always been sort of associated with imperial the emperor are usually referred to as the dragon.
As the dragon.
So it's
an auspicious symbol.
Right, it's an auspicious symbol.
Okay. Fish, you said, abundance and surplus. Ooh, cilantro. That was an interesting one I had not read about any place before. Compassion. Interesting.
I'm actually not even familiar with that myself.
Pork is bounty and family unity. Five spice tofu, happiness. Oysters, good business. But they also would look like an ingot. They're the round shape. Mm. And hard liquor. longevity. Well, I don't know. that one you have to take little by little. But hey, I like it. That's good.
Well, you mentioned regional differences. And actually, with the fish tradition in Southeast Asia, in fact, this is very specific to Malaysia, Singapore region, the Chinese diaspora had actually developed their own version of the fish dish, and it's actually a fish, raw fish salad, and it's called yu sen, and it's in fact only served really in Southeast Asia. I find it very interesting. I mean, the reason that it's called yu sen, because yu actually, like I mentioned, is abundance.
Fish and abundance, right?
Sen, and actually sen actually means moving forward, moving up. So really, you're moving a whole lot of prosperity out into the next year.
Should your fortunes grow?
Right.
Okay, that's and you find that it's really only served. You don't find it served outside of Singapore much?
It's not served very much outside of Singapore, although nowadays, because there's been exposure to it all over in Hong Kong and Taiwan, some people actually do serve it. And in fact, you can get that dish if you go to Malaysian Chinese restaurant here in New York City.
Mm.
So there are some places that actually serve yu sen for Chinese New Year.
Now, what about lotus root? Chef Anita Low here in New York City had a recipe for a wonderful sweet preparation of lotus root, saying that it was, I guess because it's round, shaped in the form of an ingot, that was supposed to be a good luck food as well.
I'm not really that aware of that, but very different regions has their own different symbolism.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of them. I hope that we can post a picture of your version of the sticky cake, the New Year's sticky cake, because it really does look lovely, and this is pre-fried. I'll let you talk about that.
Right.
And the preparation is really very simple. Now, I have to tell you, I read that recipe, and I was so interested, and we'll give that recipe to our listeners. I was very happy to read it because a lot of the nyangao that I would find in bakeries in Chinatown, let's say downtown, you often contained coconut milk. Is that common or?
It's actually quite common nowadays.
Uh-huh.
The traditional nyangao really is just sticky rice flour and sugar. Plus a little bit of oil, and traditionally, lard is used for that.
Okay, but, and this is the glutinous rice flour.
That's correct. This is
the sticky rice flour. Yeah.
Right. And so, generally, the traditional New Year cake is just sticky rice flour,
the glutinous rice flour. Water,
sugar.
Sugar, and now the different types of sugar. You say Chinese brown sugar is what you like to use.
We like to use the Chinese brown sugar because it's a little, it has a better flavoring.
Is it a cane sugar or palm sugar?
It's cane sugar.
Cane sugar. Mm-hmm. And some vegetable oil.
But, modern, it's been commercialized a lot now for making nyangao. So modern versions of these include, like green tea, include coconut.
So they flavor
the cakes, right, with different things. And even with a traditional cake, you can also actually embed a little bit of red beans in there. Jujubes can be put into the cake when you steam as well. So there are many different versions. So it's not like just one way of doing it.
Well, the version you have up on your blog is really quite nice and very simple. I mean, other than steaming it for a long time. But once you mix it up and then you steam it, you leave it alone.
Now, I actually remember when we were growing up, this, of course, this is like in the 60s of last centuries.
I got you beat there.
I could remember that, we used to actually grind the rice flour in a stone grinder at home, because we actually have a stone grinder at home. And so we didn't use pre-made glutinous rice flour. We actually soaked the glutinous rice and feed it through the stone grinder, which creates this slurry, and that's what we use. We use that slurry, mixing with sugar and steam it, and that's what the cake is.
So you would strain that off and drain it off, and And what's left? You have this ground up sticky rice. What do you do? What did nothing was done with that, or was
no? The rice actually is ground out into a very thick slurry.
Mm-hmm.
So you use the whole thing.
You use
the whole thing. Yeah, because it's. We actually do strain it a little bit just to get rid of a little bit larger pieces. But we strain it with like a cheesecloth. But the slurry itself actually would pass through and becomes a nice smooth paste, and as you steam it becomes a cake.
But today we can find glutinous sticky rice in the Chinese markets or actually a lot of other markets as well, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, now you mentioned that is if it's done the way that you like it, very sticky.
Right.
That it is so sticky, it's hard to handle. And so what is the way of serving? You mentioned an interesting way of serving it.
Correct. When we serve the cake, usually we slice it into pieces of about, 1/4 inch thick. And it's coated with an egg and cornstarch batter. And then it's pan fried. So so you will end up with this slightly crispy skin on the outside and very nice and chewy, sticky, cake in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Almost like a dumpling again, like a
That's
dessert
correct.
Dumpling. Yeah, all right. Are there any, when you go to Chinese restaurants during this time, of course, they're always bustling and special banquet menus. Do you find this on the menu, the sticky cake?
I have never really seen it in restaurants, but most people bring it home and cook it at home.
Right. It sounds like a home thing. And that's something interesting, which I wanted to bring up. The cooking and the recipes are interesting on your blog, because you call it home style cooking. But what do you mean by home? You don't actually mean different than other dishes so much. What do you mean by the home style cooking?
Well, when I said home style cooking on my blog, I'm really advocating like preparing everything from scratch. For example, making preserved bacon, for example, and things like that, which actually I'm going to be doing shortly. Although you can buy these Chinese bacons in the market, I'd like to make them at home, because the flavor is fresher, and plus you don't have all this other preservative that goes into it. So that on my blog, I really advocate making a lot of things from scratch.
So this is slow food, folks. No convenience products here. This is from scratch, right?
Right.
But I think that you're really on to a right in the wave, crest of a wave of a big trend. And so many people, and I find a lot of young chefs and young people who are enjoying cooking, are into making pickles and preserved foods and doing a lot of these what were considered tedious, time-consuming products, but they're back into doing them. I mean, they're not that difficult to do.
No.
But it just makes such a better product, and you can control what goes into it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Get a better quality of that pork for the preserved bacon, rather than relying on some commercial brand that might not be as good a quality.
That's right. Absolutely.
You're making me hungry for some some good Chinese dishes. Well, you are a busy guy, especially around this time of year with all the cooking and the feast. But aside from that, you also teach Chinese cooking.
That's correct.
And you teach at the Institute of Culinary Education.
That's right.
And also at Brooklyn Kitchen,
that's
right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You've got an interesting course. Well, you've got another dumpling course coming up.
That's correct. There's...
And in March 1st, was that going to be at Brooklyn Kitchen, or is that...
That's actually going to be at Institute of Culinary Education.
At ICE, Education. At Institute of Culinary Education.
Yeah.
And Stir Frying Demystified is coming up in the spring. That is something I think a lot of people are going to be interested in.
Right.
It sounds very good to me. And you're going to be helping out with a program coming up soon with the Culinary Historians of New York. On February 17th, the Culinary Historians of New York are sponsoring a program on Chinese cooking schools, sort of the history and the purpose of Chinese cooking schools by a scholar, Willa Zhen. And you are going to be helping some of the volunteers shop and cook for that one. There's going to be samples of Cantonese foods there.
That's correct.
New Year's foods there. And that's February 17th in New York City. And anyone interested can go to culinaryhistoriansny.org, and you can find out how to sign up for that program. So you indeed are very busy and have to go home and post this on your blog as well.
That's correct.
Well, Kian, thank you so much for taking your time out of your busy schedule to be here and help us celebrate the Chinese New Year. And
thank you for having me here.
Good. Kong Hei Fat Choy. This sounds so much better when you say it, right? Kian Lam Ko, thank you so much. And again, this has been A Taste of the Past, and I'm Linda Palacio.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.